feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Today we are going to begin a verse-by-verse study of 1 Samuel chapter 8. This story is a sad day in the history of Israel. As we will see, Israel is going to demand a king. This was wrong for them because God was their king. Let's go ahead and get right to our study and see the implications of this demand. Here now is Pastor John.
1 Samuel chapter 8. Now, as you recall, from chapter 7, the Ark of the Covenant had been captured by the Philistines. The people of Israel were engaged in a battle against the Philistines and felt as though, hey, this is the key. Bring the box into the battle, the Ark of the Covenant, and we will be assured of a victory. They were using that ark really like a rabbit's foot. This will give us good luck. This will bring us success. They weren't looking to the Lord, as we talked about, but they were depending on the ark. A big mistake. A problem that can be very potentially real to you, real to me. Where we begin to look at something rather than to look to someone, and that someone, of course, is the Lord. They thought it would bring them good fortune, like a rabbit's foot, so to speak. I was reminded recently that in America, there are 20 million homes that have a rabbit's foot in that house, either on a keychain or above a door or wherever rabbit's feet might be. Believing as though, hey, that's going to bring a degree of good luck, having a rabbit's foot. I used to have a pink one years and years ago when I was a little boy. I can remember that little pink rabbit's foot that I had. And it's kind of odd, really, because that rabbit's foot, it wasn't lucky for that rabbit. I mean, that rabbit got caught and died and lost his foot, and it didn't work for him. Why would it work for you? Why would it work for me? It just doesn't make much sense. But we fall into these patterns of thinking, well, if I just have a rabbit's foot or just have a box or if I just do this religious practice or do that religious tradition, I'm going to have victory. Well, we saw that it didn't work out for the people of Israel. They were defeated and the ark was captured. But the Philistines found the ark was too hot to handle and ultimately they sent it back to Israel. It came back to Israel. The prophet Samuel there offered a sacrifice to the Lord. The people of Israel congregated for a day of thanksgiving that the Lord had brought the ark back to them. But no sooner had they offered their thanks than the Philistines launched another attack against them. This time, though, because they were calling out to the Lord and depending on the Lord, they had victory. Victory from the Lord over the Philistines. Then we saw how then Samuel began to minister in the region, going on a circuit, traveling from city to city, sharing the word, praying for the people, judging or giving wise counsel. And that brings us now to chapter 8. In chapter 8, we see that Samuel, who was on this circuit preaching from town to town, from place to place, the circuit evidently took a toll on his family. Let's read and see. Chapter 17, ending with, in verses 16 and 17, the circuit that he was on, traveling from place to place to minister to God's people. But then, verse 1 of chapter 8, it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel, or rulers in Israel. The name of the firstborn was Joel, the name of the second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. But his sons walked not in the ways of Samuel. They walked not in the godly way that Samuel had done so beautifully, but rather they turned aside after lucre or money and took bribes and perverted judgment. These guys, these sons of Samuel, went bad. They were succumbing to the temptation, the seduction of lucre or money, taking bribes from people. They ought not to have done that, obviously. What happened? I mean, how could this be that Samuel, who when he was growing up in the temple, saw the sons of Eli? Remember the story? The priest that was in the temple when Samuel was a little boy growing up at the temple, being raised, if you would, by Eli. Eli's sons, though, they had succumbed not to lucre, but to lust. They had given themselves over to immoral practices and evidently brought in temple prostitutes there to the tabernacle of Israel. And they were giving themselves over to lust. And now Samuel, seeing that, now watches as an old man his own sons now giving themselves over to lucre. One, he saw the sons of Eli fall to sexual temptations. Now he watches his own boys succumb to money issues and taking bribes and all the rest. What happened? It seems to me that in context of our story, chapter 7 ending with Samuel traveling around on his circuit, that in reality it could be that that took a real toll on his own family. Although we read that he built an altar there at his house, it would seem as though he was gone a whole lot, no doubt justifying that in saying, well, I'm serving the Lord. I'm caring for God's people and all the rest. But right there, his top priority, his kids, were evidently not being corrected, instructed, discipled, loved on, cared for, and tended. And this can happen so easily in the ministry, in serving the Lord, in whatever area you serve the Lord in whatever ministry you have felt led to take on, it can happen. And here's what happens to mom and dads. They say, well, you know, I'm not spending a lot of time with my kids, but it's quality time. Now, I don't spend a lot of time because I'm really busy. I'm really involved in ministry stuff. Or I'm involved with career projects. But even though I'm involved with my career or I'm engaged in the ministry or whatever, I don't have a lot of time with my kids, but the time I do have is quality time. The longer I live, the more observations I make about families, the more I'm convinced that that is a bogus concept. Amen. That is, I don't have much time for my kids, but I have a real rich time with my kids. I really think that there is a real misnomer, a danger, when a guy, when a gal, when a mom, a dad says, well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time because I'm really busy and I've got a lot to do, but I'm going to really have quality time with my kid. I don't think kids make that differentiation. I think that they view quality time as quantity time. It takes time to parent properly. It takes time to just hang with your kids, to be in the room that they're in, to be hanging with them. Not just the structured devotional times, which are imperative, or the planned activities, which are wonderful, but it just takes time. I have discovered over the years personally that some of the most important conversations I've shared were those unplanned occasions. Those times when I was just there in the house or with my kids. And I do travel a lot and I am gone quite a bit. But I also know that this is a constant tension, a constant issue which I must bring before the Lord continually. Lord, help me not to be so involved in the circuit, and I can get that way, that I miss my primary ministry, which is to my kids, you see. And what a heartbreak it must have been for Samuel, like it was for Eli previously. What a heartbreak when he realizes his sons, his family, is a mess. He had a love for God, Samuel did. He had a passion to serve God, obviously. But his own kids weren't disciplined, corrected, inspired, instructed. He was gone, you see. He built an altar, we saw in our study last time, there in his home. But he was just plain old, flat out, downright gone too much. And because of that, he was not able to be the dad that he should have been. And I'll say it again and again and again. The Apostle John was right when he declared, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth." There's no greater joy than that. And that requires, I think, evaluating, Lord, am I really on your circuit or am I just going around in circles? Am I really being directed by you, Lord? See. And Samuel, he was a good man, a godly man, a great man, without question. But he was gone evidently too much. Without question, he was not cognizant of what was really going on in the souls of his kids when they were growing up. And now he sees, my boys are corrupt, they're immoral. He saw it happen as he grew up with Eli's sons, but now it's repeating itself with his own boys. Samuel didn't learn the lesson. May God help you and me as moms and dads, if we still have kids at home, may God help us to see, Lord, help me to be one who's not just going in circles, thinking I'm serving you, but in reality, I'm ignoring my primary ministry, which is spending not only quality, but quantity time with my kids. Samuel ends up in a sad place, sad to say, because his boys gave themselves over to corruption. They were sucked into mammon. They were lost in lucre. Funny, because really there are three things that Billy Graham has said over the years will sidetrack or trip up a man, a person, in their service to the Lord. One is sex. That is women for guys, or, well, now today, who knows what that means. But getting involved with somebody you ought not to be involved with sexually. Number two is money. And the third thing that Billy Graham has said over the years is pride. Those are the three things that he has characterized as being the most powerful and prominent pitfalls for people who want to walk with the Lord and give service to the Lord. Those are three things to be on guard, to be careful about, to be cognizant of. The same three things that we see throughout the Bible in our story here. Eli's sons given over to sexual immorality. Samuel's sons given over to lucre and bribery. Sad. The same things come again and again in the scriptures and in the people that we know, in the lives that we're aware of. It's the same issues. Satan has a real limited playbook. If he was a football coach, so to speak, his playbook would consist of three plays, essentially. It'd be like if you're playing a football team and you know the team you're up against. You're the coach of your team and the other team. They have three plays, a sweep around the right, a sweep around the left, and a run up the middle. That's all they do, left, right, and middle. Well, you would say, I can beat that team. If they only have three plays, I can position our defense in such a way to overcome these three plays. Well, Satan has a real limited playbook. And it would be wise if we would say, Lord, from these stories, from your word, help us to see that these are the same plays that Satan runs again and again. Help us to be wise in our defense against them. So these guys took bribes. And the elders, verse 4, they came to him. They came to Samuel, who was at Ramah, and said, "You are old, Samuel. You're old, man. And your sons do not walk in your ways. You're old and your sons aren't following in your footsteps. So make us a king to judge us like all nations. You have been a good prophet. You've been a good judge, a good leader for us, Samuel. But your sons don't have your heart. They're sucked into taking bribes and all the rest. So Samuel," they said, "make us a king like the other nations round about us have. We want to have a king too. We want to be just like them." Interesting. They wanted to be just like the other nations round about them. Here they had God as their king. The Lord was their leader, using the prophets and the judges and the priests. It's true, but none of those guys were kings. God was their king. He was over them. But now they want to fit in and be like the other nations. And the thing, verse 6, displeased Samuel greatly. It broke his heart when they said, "Give us a king to judge us or to lead us." And Samuel prayed to the Lord. It grieved Samuel, because he realized that, hey, I'm being rejected. They want to be like the heathen nations, like the pagan people. But instead of lashing out at the people, notice what he did. He looked up to the Lord, a wise thing to do. He didn't count to 10. He looked to God, and he called on him. The thing displeased Samuel, but Samuel prayed to the Lord. He didn't blow his top. He didn't let off steam. Like the story of that guy who lived all of his life by himself in the desert. And one day he decides to leave the desert for the first time in his life and make his way into the town where he had a relative. And as he makes his way into the town, he comes to a railroad track. He never saw one before. He didn't know what it was. He stands there and he sees, coming in his direction, a train. And the train is coming closer and closer, and he stands there and says, "Stop, stop." And the train, of course, doesn't stop. The train just sounds its whistle, wee, wee, and comes down towards him. And he, "Stop, stop." And the train can't stop, of course, but this guy doesn't understand that. He doesn't get what's going on. At the last minute, he jumps away and gets nicked by the train and beat up and bruised a bit, but he's okay. And he makes his way finally to the house of that relative in town. And he's all bruised up and dirty and all the rest. And he sits down and this relative says, "Well, let me get you something to drink." And he puts some water in the pot and puts it on the stove. And a few minutes later, there's this whistling sound from the teapot. And the guy from the desert, his eyes get big as saucers, and he grabs this baseball bat from the corner of the room and goes smashing that teapot. And the relative said, "What in the world are you doing?" And the guy said, "Man, you got to kill them while they're small, let me tell you." Sometimes we think we're doing just that, you know. "I'm going to deal with this issue. Bang, bang, boom," you know. In reality, we're missing the point entirely, totally. Whenever I let off steam, and I can, whenever I blow my top, and I have, I always regret it. Don't you? When you do? The Bible says that the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God. It never does. So Samuel does something wise here. And it's a great example for me, for you, for us guys here tonight. And that is, he was upset. But instead of lashing out at the people, coming down on the people, expressing his frustration to the people, he just went and he prayed. I've done that before. Maybe you have too. And whenever I have and whenever I do, I'm always really, really thrilled at the outcome. When I feel myself get kind of uptight, you know, and you feel the hair stand up on the back of your neck, and you feel frustration begin to kind of churn in your gut. You know the feeling? Any of you know that feeling at all? Maybe, well, a few of us do. It's always wise, and it's always a great thing whenever I choose to do what I know I should do. And that's just slip away, not count to 10, not take time out, but slip away to a quiet spot and just talk it over with the Lord. Go to my knees if I can, or sit there in a chair if that's appropriate or workable, whatever, and just talk to the Lord. And when I come back, I have a whole different perspective and a whole different attitude and a whole different countenance. And it doesn't take long, but it makes all the difference in the world. Now, when I don't do that, when I blow my top or let off steam or give somebody a piece of my mind, I'm discovering that, man, my mind, you know, my memory, I can't afford to give a piece of it away. I need to hang on to every piece that I have that's still left, that's still there. And it's really, people don't want a piece of my mind. I need it, and people don't want it, so just don't do it. That's the thing. And Samuel did a wise thing here, and I think this might be a word from the Lord for somebody here tonight. Cool your jets. Pipe down. Learn to pray. Don't blow your top, but pull away and say, Lord, I'm frustrated here. This isn't working out well. He doesn't understand what I'm saying. I need to talk to you, Lord. Samuel did that. Good thing, Samuel. When they said, give us a king, Samuel, he prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken to the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee. For they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Evidently, Samuel felt rejected personally. Now, this is important. Samuel felt as though the people were saying, Samuel, you're old and your kids are bad, and so get out of the way. You're too old to lead us in these days, and your kids are too rotten to do so. Give us a king. And Samuel took it personally. Now listen, he pulls away. Good for him. He doesn't blow his stack like we could do. He prays, and then he hears from God, as you and I will too. And God said, do not take this personally. It's not about you, Samuel. Why is it that I think everything's about me?
That's a good question. We tend to take things personally. Why is that? Well, unfortunately, we'll have to wait until our next program to get the answer to that question. We do hope that you can join us again then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
We would like to remind you that on the Searchlight website, you can find Pastor John's teachings through the entire Bible. You can listen to the audio or watch the video of any of these teachings from the website at any time for no charge. The Searchlight website address is johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.